The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Macrocap News. It's Friday the 6th of June, 2025. Thanks for listening. What's happening with Trump and Musk? That is nuts, isn't it? Of course, they're threatening to cancel contracts. I didn't realise that. I suppose a lot of people do if you own Filtronic. There's a lot of government contracts that SpaceX has, and then there's a concern over that. And Filtronic is dropping a little bit today. In fact, it was down, I think, 19% at one point. That's FTC. It's been an amazing performer, absolutely brilliant performer the last year or so. It's gone up by 1,000%, I think. But it's one of the things. But you see, there's a lot of support for it. Now it's bouncing back up, so you're down 6% right now. But you're still going to look at the fundamentals on a business. But what worries me is that when you get someone like Musk in charge of a business, he could change his mind overnight. Like Trump, they're very similar. Egomaniacs, you know? They can change their mind overnight. And like I said, while it's been an amazing performer, I would in no way buy it right here on the dip. Because just looking at the fundamentals anyway, I mean, this year is going to be a blowout year, 2025, for example. They're going to be doing top-line growth by 116% to 55 million. But for 26, that drops. And so if you look at profit before tax as well, that increased this year of 2025 by 319%, but it's going to drop by 41% next year. Of course, they may get more new contracts, but just sheds a light on the sort of capriciousness or the just a change in mind of Trump and Musk. They're crazy, aren't they? Both of them. Just Musk talking about Epstein files. Musk had a lot of people on his side, I think. And it may mean, you know, bitter apples, bitter orange, whatever, about his, about EVs not getting subsidized in the new bill. But he did have a point about the debt of America being completely unsustainable. Like it's increasing by $1 trillion, I think, some estimates say, every 180 days. And they're spending now more on just the interest payments than defence, which is crazy. So I don't think, I shouldn't think there'd be an adverse impact on FTC. It's, you know, I think all the contracts are going to stay there and do well for a while. But like I said, you've got to look at the fundamentals. It's worth it. Also thinking all the time is, you know, think of numbers over narrative. Every company's share price pretty much after a while will reflect the numbers. Yes, there'll be times when news comes out and the narrative takes over. But when it comes down to the end of the day, it's the numbers that count. And there's a company out today, and I don't say who it is because you tend to get, whenever you mention a stock and you talk about it negatively, fundamentally, then you get a lot of fans attacking you. In fact, obviously, I asked yesterday, thank you very much if you give me a review, by the way, on the podcast. That's very kind. It's not easy to do. Apparently, what you need to do is go to Apple, click on the picture to go to show, and then go down, write a review. And you see some person has slagged me off because I knew nothing about economics or anything like that. And I thought, well, okay, I've obviously talked about one of your companies you don't like, and you give me a bad review. But yeah, it's a company that's, you know, a huge fan base, and it's in biotech, pharma company. And you've got to look at the fundamentals, regardless of what the story is. Of course, stories are very powerful, and you may believe a certain company has something very special that deserves, you know, a 10-bagger re-rating. But when it comes down to it, unless you have the finance in place, you know, that's the way the company will go. It'll follow the finances of the company. And so, you know, beyond all, there's no way, if you're investing in a very risky company that's sort of, you know, pre-revenue, loss-making, but you believe their product or service is the best out there, how do you validate this? There may be, you know, five different companies in China with a similar product that's cheaper. You don't know. There may be someone in America with the same kind of product that's got more traction. You don't really know until they start signing deals or generating revenue. And that way, if revenue starts growing, you know, by double digits, you know, consistently, you understand then there's demand for the product or service. beyond what the peers are achieving. And that's how you validate it from a commercial standpoint, whether it is a product or service that's better than anything else. So when you're guessing on a pre-revenue company, I lost me, it's very high risk. And this is why, you know, since interest rates have gone up, I've only focused on, you know, revenue-generating profitable companies. I mean, I keep an eye on companies about to be profitable, of course, because it's a lot easier, it's a lot less risky to invest in those kind of companies. And the upside, you know, can be equally as great and more sustainable. Because if the growth is based on profits, like, for example, Ramsden's was yesterday, then it's sustainable. They're not going to drop off a cliff anytime soon. So their asset, you know, they're growing their assets, and that's what it comes down to. But like I say, when you are taking a punt, and it is a punt, on a story, because you believe it's the best story out there, it's very risky. But that is anchored to the fundamentals. And so, you know, when they run out of cash, certain companies, what are they going to do about it? In fact, you know, today I'm going to talk about two of my companies. In fact, Ramsden's one. I saw some commentary. I thought, you don't know what you're talking about. What I hate is when you get so-called respected market commentators talking about a stock. I don't know all stocks. Of course I don't. But when a well-followed sort of commentator talks about a stock and they don't really know much about it. You know, they don't know more than top line sort of review of it. And they give their opinion and then people or private investors take that opinion on board. But no, do your own research, ladies and gentlemen. Please do your own research. And because that's how you make money. If you want to make money, it's never going to be easy. It's like anything in life. If you start your own business, to make it a success, it's very hard. There's long hours. In fact, I listened to a podcast yesterday on founders about raising canes. This guy who all he wanted to do was start a chicken finger business. I didn't know what chicken fingers were. I mean, did they call them strips over here? And even in college, I think it was in the business studies, he wrote a dissertation on this restaurant. And he said, all I want to sell is chicken fingers. He's like, I love them. I want to make the best chicken fingers in America. And he was criticized by his college professor who said, listen, you need some variety on the menu. You know, look at McDonald's or KFC. They've got lots of things they sell. He said, yeah, I'm interested in concentrating on one thing only. I'm going to concentrate on that, and I make it the best ever. And in fact, I'm going to get my podcast here and see who this is, because I can't remember the guy's name, and it's a disservice. Todd Graves. That's right, Todd Graves. What's it called? Chicken Finger Dream. Raising Canes is the thing. Anyway, he was given a low mark by his business professor and saying, no, listen, that's a silly business model. And so he started off with one restaurant, and they are sort of drive-through restaurants. And he worked all the hours godsend in his first restaurant. His co-founder, co-partner, his partner left him after the first restaurant. He went to the second restaurant. He opened that. It was very hard work. Right now, he's worth about $10 billion. He owns it all, and he owns 800 Raising Canes in the US. So you understand, that's taken years and years and years. So starting a business is very, very hard. It's very hard indeed, but you can get very wealthy. So it's high risk, high reward, okay? And I keep saying, you know, one of the other things you can do is invest in a great business, which is like in stocks and shares as an investor. And that's never, it's nowhere near as hard as owning a business. You know, you can sit at your desk pretty much and do research from desktop and just go to your brokers and hit buy. But it does take time and research. So I'm just saying, you know, you have to do research yourself. And if you want to make money, you've got to get better at it. And you've got to get to the stage where you trust your own judgment on companies and stocks. Okay? Because there seems to be, in this field, there's a lot of people who just follow others. Honestly, to start off with, it's quite good. But try and learn from it and try and do your own research. And you get to the stage where you can think, okay, and I see that, I think that's a good investment. And you can give, you know, reasonable arguments for why it's a good investment. And those arguments should be fundamental. It should be based on numbers, not because I think this technology is amazing. It's the best out there. That's just an opinion of one. You know, and like I said, numbers aren't facts. Narrative isn't fact. The numbers the company produce are facts. So are you going to base your judgment on the facts, which are the numbers, or the fiction, which is the narrative? Fact. Anyway, let's have a quick look at the markets. Trump, Tesla fall off of 12%, 14% down yesterday? It became a sub-trillion-dollar company. I think beyond this, Tesla was suffering anyway, wasn't it? Sales in the US, in Europe are down massively. They've got competition in China from BYD. And now the subsidies on EVs in America have been withdrawn. So, you know, he's quite upset. The thing is, something like Musk almost could blow up a company, couldn't he? And I don't think he'd care. That's the worry sometimes. Okay, anyway, let's look at the markets here. Let's go to the FTSE 100. It's up, well, slightly, 0.16% to 8824. The high there was 8871, so not far off the all-time high. FTSE 250, pretty much flat, 21078. FTSE small cap is up 0.12%. Oh, I've added the FTSE fledgling. I don't even know what that is, but it's an all-time high. Oh, no, it's not. It's not an all-time high. The all-time high was back in November 21. That's a good sign because it's very much the shape of the AMOL share, but I assume with a lot of the dross taken out, so it's risen a lot further and faster. It's literally gone up by, let's have a look, since the sell-off, so since the 10th of April, it's gone up by, 15%. In fact, what has AIM done? AIM has gone up by, I know it's over 20% because it's it hasn't gone as far as AIM. AIM is up again today, by the way. It's up at 21.65% from the low. That's a technical bull market. It's at 757, up 0.4%. That's good news. I do think there's going to be money outflow from America. Just, you know, maybe not the Mag 7 and all that, but just the uncertainty that's happening. And of course, it freezes investment and investment decisions. So Brent crude down 0.4%, $65 a barrel. Where's gold here? Gold is up a little bit. It's not far off again. It's high. It sort of peaked out at 3,425. It's now at 3,375. So what's not far off? And do you know what? It did come back and it's rallied again. And if you're talking about uncertainty, gold is the place to be. Copper. I don't know about Bitcoin, to be honest. It's funny, Bitcoin. Again, it's all about the narrative, isn't it? Very powerful narrative, and stories are powerful. You know, people saying it's the new gold. And then it sort of sells off for the S&P. You think, is it? Well, I don't know if it is, really. Or sells off for the NASDAQ. And I saw a guy on CNBC yesterday, down-talking it, saying it's basically trash. It's one of the biggest hope high potential stories all around ever, but he sees it going to zero. I don't know if it will go to zero. I just think the security and the way it's structured and set up is very clever. Security has never been hacked, Bitcoin. Well, like I say, if you account for all the people who were early adopters of Bitcoin, tech guys, really into programming and all this stuff, clever guys, you know, none of these people have ever hacked it. And I guarantee so many people have tried to hack the coming blockchain and stuff. They can't. So technology is very good and the security is very secure. So I think it'll stabilize. I don't think it'll rise as fast as people think, but I think it could become the new gold if it stabilizes a bit. Anyway, that's why I hold a tiny little bit. So copper, it's down today 1.2% to 10,745. What else is there? The American indices are down. Nasdaq down 0.8%. S&P down 0.5%. And the Dow Jones 0.25%. Anything else? Let's look at the yields on government bonds. The 2-year It's pretty much flat at 4% two-year yield. The 10-year, 4.6, again, flat. And the 30-year is down 0.4%. The yield is 5.3. A pound will buy you €1.18, and it'll buy you $1.35. Whoosh. Yeah, maybe a USA trip is looking better. Okay, let's look at some microcap news. This is from our microcap database. There's now over 200 companies, 250, or close to 250 companies in this database. All microcaps, all generating revenue. And by microcap, I mean the sub 100 million market cap and generating revenue. I don't look at pre-revenue because that's too risky, way too risky. The time for story stocks was when interest rates were very low, because there's no funding issues. Like I said, some of you know, if a company has funding issues, if a story stock has funding issues, then it blurs the story and the focus becomes the funding. But when you had, you know, ultra low interest rates of 0.25% or something ridiculous, then the funding was an issue. So the stories could shine. It could thrive. And now they've gone from thrive to survive. That's what, you know, loss-making story stocks are doing. They're trying to you know, just survive funding. Anyway, in fact, we have seen a little bit of an uptick. So, you know, a rising tide and all that raises all boats, all that kind of thing. So, what the hell is that? My entire office shook then. Okay, first and foremost, Bango. Bango. BGO is ticker, provides technology and partnerships that online merchants need to acquire more paying users. Thousands of merchants and developers benefit from Bango technology, from startups to the world's largest online businesses, including Amazon, Google, Microsoft. They've got this digital vending machine, haven't they, where people can, I don't know, do you know what, for a while, I thought, do you know what's annoying on TV at the moment? If you find a good series, it's often on a platform you're not paying for, a subscription service. Like we have Netflix, and I think now I'm paying for Amazon Prime because I can get Paramount through that. I think surely there's one service that can come up with this and just, you know, aggregate them all in some way. Is that a way forward? Because let's be honest, there's going to be some that could just fall by the wayside anyway. So surely that's the way to do it. Yeah. Bango, yeah. So they do this. Well, that's what they do. I just explained to you. Digital, so they can aggregate this pay. They can do this kind of thing in different for telcos and all that stuff. But anyway, it's been a serial sort of disappointer, Bango. I remember reading about this in Investors Chronicle. When my first son, we went to Turkey. I was on holiday. And literally, I think he was tipped in Investors Chronicle. And back then, I thought, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. And largely about the story. But anyway, so they are a 71 million market cap, 73 million enterprise value. And top line growth, up 16%. Loss before tax improved by 55% to 1.3 million. This is in pounds. Yeah, but listen, this is ridiculous. So what's annoying is that if you look at the results, all I'm going to say is they weren't as bad, 2024 results weren't as bad as last year. That's as positive as it gets. What's quite annoying is Singer Capital Markets. That's a different thing. Singer Capital Markets, that's the broker. They never report. The actual report is statutory figures. They only do adjusted figures, which is all other brokers do, reported and adjusted. I'm sure they do pretty much. And the adjusted figures do not reflect the real figures at all. And I give you an example. So Singers have an adjusted profit for tax of $4.8 million for 2024. $4.8 million profit before tax, right? Profit. Whereas the reported figures, the actual figures, are a loss before tax of $3.5 million. That's an $8.3 million difference. So suffice to say, can't really rely on their forecasts. What I'm prepared to bet is that Bango will not be profitable for 2025. unlike the broker's number suggests. The company has only posted a profit twice in the last 7 years, one of them very small, insignificant, close to break even. And I'd say they're not going to do one this year. So if Singer's CBGO is improving, it seems odd they've downgraded the following figures, 25. First of all, they've downgraded revenue from 60.1 million to 54.8. They've downgraded their target price from £2.20 to £22. And I don't see how they even get to that. I suppose it's on a revenue multiple. And they've also got an increased debt now from $1.6 million to $17.6 million. I can't see why this company has a market cap of $70 million. Even if it was half this amount, I probably would ignore it. So I'm just saying, bango, put in the bingo. The bin, I mean. I'm trying to make a wordplay on bango there. But, yeah. No, please, Singer. I did email the guy from Singers today. Please, Singers. Honestly, you are the only broker at the moment that literally do not show the reported figures alongside the adjusted figures. And I don't know what the adjustments are, to be honest. All I want to know is, you know, will they be making a real profit next year? And you have them as being saying yes, but also you have them making a real profit this year. And they weren't anywhere near that. So please, if you can, report it. Sorry, I was just trying to type while I was talking there. I never get to, when I email a broker, you never get any response. I don't know why they're not allowed to. Next company up is SDI. The acquisition of Severn Thermal Solutions. That's Severn, S-E-V-E-R-N, not seven, as in seven companies. So SDI Group designs and manufactures scientific and technology products for use in digital imaging. They're a buy and build company. If you go to their website, they've got so many different products. Unbelievable, and companies. Phenomenal. Well, I think it's too much, to be honest. How do you keep it tracking all these? Surely there's some companies within that portfolio not doing very well. Get rid of the worst performing ones, keep the best performing ones. You'd do a lot better, wouldn't you? So anyway, market cap of 74 million. This is 71 pence, by the way. Enterprise value 94. So pretty much got, you know, debt of 21 million. And in fact, the last set of results said net debt of 20 million. So this company they bought, historically, it's generally attractive adjusted operating margin of 35%. So what do they pay for it? Let me scroll down. They paid. Acquisitions of Collins Walker. Sorry. They paid £4.75 million for it, and it turns over this company £2.4 million, adjusted EBIT of 0.88, so 880,000. So what's that? Just below six times. That's all right, I suppose. Comments wise. For 2025, revenues are expected to be flat, with profit before tax dipping slightly 3% to 5.5 million. This puts them on a PE of 18 at 71 pence a share, not particularly cheap. They also have net debt of 20 million, which is 1.6 times EBITDA. So whilst not challenging, it's worth keeping an eye on, as they are a buy and build company. So more acquisitions would increase this leverage. 2026 figures have been upgraded on this acquisition, with top-line growth now of 13% and profit before tax growth of 41%, which puts them on a PE of 13 at 71 pence. Not too bad. The share price has broken some resistance recently. It's had a good rise. 70 pence the previous resistance was, which now sort of becomes support. The next resistance level looks about 80 pence. If the share price comes back and they release a trading update confirming 2026 figures, this could be worth watching SDI. So it's not cheap, they've got a bit of debt, but nevertheless, you know, it's a profitable company and seem to be improving, but they are buy and build crazy, SDI. That's it. Two companies there, that's all there was. Friday again, most companies are not sort of working, or brokers are not working, I don't know. They decide there's no point putting things out on a Friday, which I think is silly, because, you know, some people, when they have some downtime, especially private investors, maybe they don't care about private investors, but private investors, you know, if they're working all week, they've got a bit of downtime to do a bit of research on the weekend. Anyway, I'm going to talk about two companies. One of them is Ramsden's again, because it annoys me, the comments that someone said, doesn't know much about the company. The first one is Time Finance. Have a look at Time Finance, okay? And the reason why I say this is because they're coming out with a trading update end of this month. Now, their last upgrade, just to put this in context, Time Finance has posted 6 upgrades to their figures in the last 2 years. 6. What does that mean? That means they've been doing better than the market guidance 6 times. And if you look at the growth, it's quite impressive. Now, their last upgrade was on the 27th of February. And in a subsequent update, a trading update after, they said, this ongoing positive trading momentum provides the board with significant confidence. Significant confidence. What does that mean? Well, it means they're hugely confident that the group financial performance for financial year 24-25 will be at least in line with current guidance. That's the guidance that was upgraded in February. So it's going to be at least in line. So the minimum, of course, is that it'll be in line with that, the guidance. Now, considering this company, they do what I like a company to do. And that's, you know, under-promise and over-deliver. This trading update on 26th of June, I would not be surprised if it's another upgrade. Now, check out their social media. Okay, look on LinkedIn and X, either one of those two, and see the amount of contracts they're landing. They are busy, very busy. And like I said, they have a reputation for, you know, under-promising and over-delivering. And that's the way it should be. You shouldn't be over-promising and under-delivering, because that's when downgrades happen and share price crashes. This company's outperforming, but they don't like to shout about it. So check it out. Like I said, I will not be surprised if, what is it, on the 26th of June, they provide another. And by the way, if you look at their fundamentals, they're expected to do, for this year, profit for tax growth of 21%. And they're on a forecast PE of 9.6. That's all. Less than 10. And if you look at their growth, it's just, I think it's undervalued. It's really, they've consistently grown by double digits over the last 2-3 years since the new CEO came in and refreshed the strategy. So check out Time Finance. Again, don't pay attention to people who are commentators or bloggers who know nothing about the business. They're very conservative in their risk and reward. And people said, oh, what about if a recession happens? Listen, we've been on the edge of a recession for the last 2-3 years. And this company's been thriving. Thriving. Why? Because it's not about that. It's about banks now. Don't loan to small and medium-sized enterprises. That's where Time Finance has stepped in. Anyway, I'm going to explain about Ramsons, because market commented, there's no clue what he's talking about. Understand this. H&T was the bigger company, but they were largely majoring in pawnbroking, okay? Ramsons is a bit different from that. They have 4 income streams that suit any macro environment. If there's economic uncertainty like recently, gold prices tend to rise and pawnbroking does well. If the economy is doing well, jewellery sales and people go on holiday, hence more currency exchange. So they've got precious metal buying and selling, jewellery sales, pawnbroking and currency exchange. Okay, 4, and they're almost equally balanced. But, listen to this, so, you know, when people tend to go on holidays anyway, there's always people that need short-term loans. So that's always very steady. It's always growing. However, even in uncertain terms, people have still bought jewellery and are still going on holidays. It's one of those things people don't cut back on holidays. You know, you have one life and think, I still want to experience, unless you're in dire straits, people tend to go on holidays anyway, you know? So neither of these businesses really suffers in downturns, but they have the ability to do better in upturns, like the gold side of the business. Even if the gold price moves lower, Ramsons still generate a similar margin, and the margins on jewellery get better. So it's both an effective defensive and offensive play. What I also like is that they have 170 stores and dedicated websites to each business segment. Therefore, they have both geographical and supply diversification. You imagine the opposite, for example. One shop selling jewellery. If that shop gets like broken into, or there's roadworks outside, or the economy takes a downturn, it could be seriously affected. One shop, one product. This will never happen to Ramsay. They have 170 brick-and-mortar locations, website sales, and four different offerings. They also say there's about 330 locations in the UK with a population that will support a store. So there's an opportunity to open up 160 more stores. There are 170 right now. Now, having opened already 170 stores, the management, as you can imagine, are well-versed at how to do it. They know exactly what to look for, what size store, what location is going to be in, and how they do it. It's largely a copy-and-paste operation. The other thing I like about the business is the management buyout. This is back in the day when this was listed, this was a management buyout with Peter Kenyon, the CEO, at the head of this, who still owns over 3% of the business. Now, he seems passionate about the business, and if you look at the reviews on Trustpilot, customers seem to notice this. They're getting excellent reviews. Go on LinkedIn, check it out. The management are also very good at finding efficiencies. From 2016 to 2025, revenues increased by 266%. The store count hasn't gone up materially, really. Listen to this. So revenue's gone up by 260%, right? Net profit has increased by 555%. So you see, they're getting operational efficiencies. As they get bigger, they're getting more efficient. The margin is getting better. Now, H&T, it's a bigger pawnbroking rival. It wasn't as diversified as thing. Was taken out at 12 times earnings. And yet, Ramsay's is a lot better business. They have a more diversified operating model, an excellent track record of upgrades. One, they did an upgrade in 22, upgrade in 23, upgrade in 24, and an upgrade in 25. Again, another management team who, under-promise, over-deliver. And these upgrades, by the way, were before the gold went on run. So this is the normal operating business was being upgraded before gold went higher. And also, by the way, they have Ramsay's a better return on equity than H&T. So I believe it should be at least 12 times earnings, at least. And it's just barely now on 10. And remember, they're probably going to be upgraded again soon. And the more stores they open, the more efficient they get. So the profit drops to the bottom line. So I think people realise this is not H&T, it's better than H&T. And they've literally got an immense track record of upgrades and efficiencies. Anyway, that's my ramp on thing. It's not a ramp. How long have I held this company for? It's a company. I've had Ramsay's for 437 days. That's how long I've held it for. So people say, oh, you're ramping, pumping, and dumping. No, I'm not dumping at all. I'm an investor in that business because I think it's a great business. And the management team are very good. And I think the potential and the outlook is still very good. In fact, better than ever. Anyway, that's it. Do your own research, as I say. So that's my side of it, but do your own research. And don't just listen to top-line reviews from market commentators and all that stuff who don't know the business. It's infuriating to listen to that. But that's it. Have a nice weekend. And by the way, check out sharepickers.com. If you're not a member, then, consider being a member. If you have an interest in microcap stocks, why focus on microcaps? Like I said, 60% of the best performance over 3 to 5 years are microcap stocks. But they're also revenue generating, profitable. Okay, so not the pop and drop story stocks. They are literally good businesses that are improving on a profit basis. Okay. And if you get my book, if you buy my book, you can get 25% off the ShareBickers Investment Club. And like I said, it works out to about £2.80 a week, less than £3. And it's an investment in yourself. It is an investment in learning about. If you're going to learn about anything, learn about investing. You have the ability to make money. It's not like putting it's not like buying Netflix. When you buy Netflix, you basically sit there and vegetate and just stare at the screen. You're watching other people's creativity. Whereas if, you're doing an investment club like mine, then you learn and you build upon your knowledge and you give yourself the skills. Anyway, that's it. Thanks for listening. And have a lovely weekend. We'll speak to you next week.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Please do your own research.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.